flashlight. There is, I don't know if anyone wants to see it. But there is a laser probing showing the galactic systems, how they are interacting. The closest thing to what goes on inside of your body with meditation is this particular planetarium show that they have. I suggest that you go and see it tonight, so that you will understand what part of it, what the abundance tells you. Because it deals with some of the parts that are falling inside of yourself. And you can't appreciate or understand or begin to get the grasp of what realization of God is. It's not somebody sitting on the throne looking for you as a dead either. But these internal movements that are all happening occurring 24 days, 7 days a week, up to a month of eternity. But your ego or individuality could be locked in for many different verbal fixations and block out 24 months. And when I saw that program, I thought myself that the closest thing I'm accomplished mechanically to represent the entire cancer. That's why metaphysicians wrote years ago a microcosm and a macrocosm. And many of us don't even begin to understand what's going on inside. But the craving to discover the internal realms at infinite level, because predominantly every one of us, yet the comparison is reciprocal. Although you can see outside the similar presentation, there's not all that's involved, yet you get a sort of perspective as to what is occurring inside of you, so that when you start going deeper into yourself and understanding some of the laws and the line interaction with your own nature, you get a better grasp of what you're talking about. And so it's not some kind of a religious nebulous problem. We're involved with discovering what we are, and we don't know that until we've made millions of mistakes, misapplied decisions and millions of lifetimes to come through this comprehension. And when you do get to go off to your internal experience, it's so simple and obvious that you miss it. Like 2 weeks ago, there was a teacher who came to the wisdom, and he didn't say the same thing about what I was talking, but God is so close to you, like a pen in your ears, and you're busy searching for that subject. And I think you're describing God. So like somebody put a pen in your ear, and then you're busy spending all the entire day looking for that for God. And everything that you can up for example, not this thing, but this thing. And yet they wear the pen in your ears. So the internal experiences that we're talking about is going on inside of you. And Jesus used the term, when the eyes are single, the body is full of light. And light is shining in the darkness, darkness comprehends it not. I let the light so shine before men that it may see the good works within the fellow friend of you. This can be very stretched up, nebulous statements, not having anything to do with the actuality of what is involved in the process of interacting with your own emotions. And yet when you find that the equipment is being evolved through the intellect of the brain and reaching a point of coordinating it, to look at it optically, you can see some of the connections are already there. And as above, so below, simply mean what is operating and the visible is operating on the invisible. And you can't establish laws externally outside of us that are not already operating inside of us. The difference between the physicist and the alive individual is the physicist is doing an objective analysis apart from the body, and the realized person is involved in intimate interaction of the physics inside of the body. But they're the same, actually. observations of the mankind that is then you can see your own and all the love of yourself, you can't even look outside and spot them very fast. And by the time the scientists evaluate it, you see anything new rather than perceptive in a terminology that is great truth. But we're going to say the same identical truth and label it, photograph it, and record it as actually the human being. So you are a miniature model of your cosmos, and then to see that last night being photographed and put together. Interesting foundation. So we were hoping that we'd be able to go and then see it before we do the upper process. But when we begin to interact with it, we can explain more of what goes on in the future. So that's the whole foundation.
You know, that's our plan. It's clear. We should be here by
5:45.
Make sure we get in. We're going to go there. We'll all come back here this afternoon.
What is that again? Of yourself. We cannot breathe to you, but you can make you conscious that something that is true for the 4 hours a day that allows you to be conscious of it the other day. You couldn't be conscious of that feeling if you didn't breathe. And as long as you breathe, you will be conscious of it. But it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the fact that you do breathe to be conscious of it. And yet, in a strange way, that feeling continues inside of you. You can't escape yourself. Now, in physics, they may call it homeostasis. Nature, in its entirety, is rooted in the equilibrium of two or spheres interacting upon itself. So centripetal and centrifugal forces acting on the single point of the pole itself. In religious languages we refer to it as God spirit. Not somebody sitting in a throne where you can get people. But principle that can infuse you to live life and at the same time it can reach you. But it provides you the opportunity to be. It provides you individuality to experience this process. But it can't do the work for you in breathing. That's the only thing that we want to do. It will provide you the opportunity to push the air into you, but still you in the end. Because you're given individuality past the simple knowledge. The same way that the human beings. The gas is put into it that gives you up past the simple knowledge to function. Otherwise, you have to send it back to the manufacturer. one of the unusual phenomena there is that when you were sung asleep last night, do you remember that? When you were sung asleep last night? And so if you can't remember who you are when you were sung asleep, do you think you would know who you are if you don't wake up? That goes on in you every day from the time you're conscious of the person. And you go on in you until the day you decide to find out for sure what you are. And when you aren't aware of who you are, when you're sound asleep, if you're a man or a woman, you'll break in the very first commandment, followed by Jesus, for human beings to live. But that's where we are. To love the Lord by God with all of your mind. That means you have to be conscious when you say, what are you doing? To perform love. You cannot be unconscious to love me. Who can you love when you're not conscious? You can't even love yourself. So these are the facts. Natural flow is an experience which we are trying to let the individual understand what they have left. Hear of it, we're caught up in two different aspects. The miraculous aspect, which we call the something from nothing attitude, or the passenger. And then the compassionate attitude of the grace overcome your limitation. And last, but least known, is the responsible attitude, where you take control of your existence by getting behind the wheel like a driver. And this is the one method that all the teachers try to tell us, but very few of us embark upon it, get involved with, and that is becoming master of ourselves. be the third mystery. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, which is within you, and its righteousness, and it will free you, free men of God of the Son. That is the whole I thank you, what you're describing in technical terms, is the time to look inside of your solar structure and observe how the laws of nature operate within you. And these very same laws are interrelated with your environment, and it will free you from the fixations of the environment and give you the freedom to move through it in a state of education. The environment is geared to challenge you in two states, hyper or hypo. Hyper means going fast, hypo means going slow. And the realized person, conscious in between, they call it Krishna consciousness or Christ consciousness, the balance between the two poles of nature, from inside and outside of the self. And we don't arrive there until we have experienced either one of the two or both. And so, our first experience is called abuse. Then the second experience is called avoidance or renunciation. Then the third is conscious commitment. If you can't apply conscious commitment and be a conscious person, so many lives are provided and many forms are provided for the individuality to relate to. And then we come back to one life form, then we comprehend how it's put together and what we are, and then it's possible to make the bridge between who you are and what you are in terms of the spoken word. Now, we know this is a very long process, and it's not going to be overnight, and creative intelligence has no intention to go out of business before midnight eternity. So we realize and try to encourage the brothers and sisters to wake up to the reality of what they are and all the different cycles or ages of the problem, to grasp the moment to understand how they operate. And so each age or cycle, there are certain teachers who come to remind us that we must lock into some type of nature in order to be free from the environmental fixation. The method is always the same, it doesn't change. We tend to reinforce it and remind ourselves that we have to look inside the time. We may change some of the terminology to suit the time frame we're in. Can't change the laws of the language. The language will help to free the brain from guilt. Because if the language fosters guilt, it breaks you down. Terms like sin will keep breaking you down. Make you feeling guilty all the time. But when you begin to accept the responsible option of living in the now, and you only have two options to behave in it, that is, practical decisions and the impractical decisions. So you make the transition from sin, no sin, to impractical decisions and practical decisions. Sin will make you feel guilty. Impractical decisions make you feel you can improve but not feel guilty, and that you can take a more active approach to your own self-correction. That would be for the next 300 years, and impractical decision would be an impractical way to describe human health. You may be referring to human error as minus the third pattern in the loop, the tree, in the square triangle, in the data bank of your input ratio, in the square of your mass. By that time you'll be operating in multi-packs. So if you see a blip on the screen and mistake it for some card or a prehistoric geometry, you might understand it in the time frame, and you need a misapplied decision. Sounds funny, but that's what we do. Learn more and more of the context of our responsibility for the sense.
It comes from the word guile, to fool oneself. This is the basis of creation. That's why there is no commandment, thou shalt not sin. If there was a commandment, thou shalt not sin, creation would not be here. Because a unified field is stagnant, and it's only potentially stationary within its own self, perturbing momentum. But it can't generate outside of that until it starts to postulate. And to postulate, it must project ideation, which you call theory or desire. And to do that, it must have a purpose. In the unified field, there is no need for purpose. It's already unified. So there is no need to activate truth. Unified field is truth, or the root of mass. Then it has to perpetuate some kind of an action to make that mass interact. So guile or beguiling or proposing is a form of postulating. I would like to do this if I would get this, or if I would. So all the various possibilities of beginning is set up to trigger a unified field into a relative field. And early man used that particular postulate as Maya, the Sanskrit word for illusion, a postulation or a proposal. In the modern language we call it a theory. So you're entitled to your theories or your postulations or so-called beguiling to trigger you to act. And then there's the compensation for every beguiling or theory. That is the experiment. Now, you may be a great designer and would like to design your bathtub because you want to take a bath in it. But can you take a bath in a blueprint bathtub? Now, picture yourself for one moment, creative intelligence wanting to excuse individuality because it's already operating in totality. How would it set up individuality? Totality is authoritative. Individuality is not authoritative. And in order to experience individuality, you'd have to lie to yourself. And in order to lie to yourself, you'd have to take an illusionary process to give that visionary object the right to confront the totality. It's a self-made revolution. So creative intelligence sets up its own internal revolution by the authoritative process of making a manifestation, which is a Xeroxing copy of itself, and endowing it with individuality to lie to itself in order to rebel, to experience compassion. So if God didn't say, come let us make man or a manifestation, there would be no need for multiplicity out of a unified field. Give you an example. You have a bowl of water. Does that bowl of water stimulate your imagination? But if somebody comes along and drops a rice in it, a bean, or a marble, what would happen to the bowl of water? Each one being different in size. Would you be suddenly stimulated to what? The variety of that. So that is the individuality of waves within the unified field. Yet which wave is more important than which one? But in the interaction of the waves, what would be the end result?
Calm. Perfect.
Good. But if it calmed down, then that is no challenge to the bowl of water. The real challenge to the bowl of water is to sustain what? The ongoing reaction. So manifestation cannot stop from a unified field after once endowed with individuality. It is designed to experience and sustain it until midnight eternity. John turn the clock now. Remember? So God is stuck in his life. Us. Because we are the ripples. Well, we were thrown into the process without our consent. Which ripple or wave gave its consent to be a wave in the water? No? No, we don't have free will, we have free choice. There's a big difference between free will and free choice. Free will is water is there and reacts to an imposition, forcing ripples to appear. Free choice is which ripple wants to be big in terms of the air process, pressurizing it, versus which one wants to remain little. So our free choice is all hot air. How much we can pump up ourselves to act. But nevertheless, we will be given the chance to breathe, which is the free will to sustain us in the environmental field, and how much of that will we use to impress ourselves. So that's what they call Maya or illusion, or theorizing. We are constantly pumping up our emotional nature to interact. So last night when we went to bed, before you shut your eyes and became unconscious, did you not beguile yourself or pump up yourself or theorize that you gotta come here tonight and see Adama? Huh? Well, if you did wake up, tell yourself you're gonna wake up, did you wake up? We have to keep saying something to the computer, which is called intellect. Your five senses don't intellectualize. Your five senses are like a camera. All it does is photograph. But until your parents call you labels and force you to repeat those labels in a functional, practical manner, you didn't have a computer action going in your brain. And they're not going to let you out of their sight if you're impractical in your functioning in regards to the problem. You may send it to some doctor to let him check you out if you're rational or not. And so the churches will hang on to that kind of a label and say, give me your child up to 7 years, you can have him back here in my way, he can belong to us. And then another group of colors said, well, we can break that pattern by brainwashing them. One brainwashing, one brain clean. By that time, nature will come along and break both the brainwashing and the brain clean by snapping your bones or your muscles and let you look at yourself once and for all, which is more important, what you said to yourself or what you heard or what your body will do for you. You will find in the end, what they say to you, and what you've heard, will gradually give way to how you feel. And that's exactly what intelligence must give way to this particular principle locked up in us as rebellion. Intuition will force us to rebel. And when you rebel, that'll be the first step towards discovering what you are versus who you are. Then that beguiling or fooling yourself or perceiving has served its purpose. Then you're forced to look at it in another depth of your nature and come to grips with what you have experienced that seems to work and what don't work. Things that you told yourself versus things that you told to you. And then you have the comparison. What you told yourself that sustains you from breaking down, you're going to stick with. What you told to you that seems to sustain itself, you'll stick with. So in the end, you're going to pull it together, and that would be a resolution for the beguiling or the guilt feeling when you come to grips with what is practical and functional. But we have a problem. since we're not adults evolving to a child, we're stuck with a process that programs us to mistakes, correction of mistakes, and revolution to be your own true nature. So we evolve it from a child to an adult, never from an adult to a child. So we cannot get around that kind of process governed by nature. So you're entitled to the beguiling, to the fooling, that is so-called lying to yourself or theorizing to yourself, until you have to come to grips with the actual functions inside of the mechanism, then you quit. That's why they say, you know, commandment, thou shalt not lie. You're entitled to lie to yourself. But thou shalt not bear false witness against your neighbor. But as far as lying to yourself, that's the privilege of an individual. And creative intelligence will not invoke it.
And if you have questions you want to ask before we explain what is going on inside of your head and what is actually the accomplishment you're trying to achieve in your meditation, can you start and ask a question that you'd like to ask? The depth of awareness varies in everyone, but at the same time the degree of your health is predetermined by the depth of volume you can handle. You don't know that until you're exposed to it. Then you will find out to what level your immune levels are working. And volume in sound is a way in the future that we researchers and doctors are going to test your immunity to cope with your environment. And your body will be the measuring stick of what volume you can take. See, spontaneous reaction to noise can do many things to your mechanism. But if you panic under it, then your immune level drops down. But if you don't, your immune level starts moving up. And most of us don't know that, that the immunity is already set for sonics. So the volume of your body is making different reactions in different parts of your anatomy. You'd be surprised if you heard the volume of your heartbeat. How many can close their eyes and listen to the heart pumping in their chest? Now, the next question is, after hearing it inside of your chest, have you ever gone to the level where you and the heartbeat are one? That you've heard it inside, but you've never experienced beyond that level. So, all the sonics that you relate to at that range would determine the weakness of the heart. And your health will shift proportionately to the resonance of that sonics. And until you can go deep into the heartbeat, and you can't make any conscious shift in the immune level to regulate it. Equiflow is the result known as cosmic awareness. Most people are looking for God, expecting something on a throne. But total identification with God is actually your conscious integrated with the sonic resonance of your body to the point where you speak and the immune level automatically responds. That's how come you, Jesus said, it's not what you put in your mouth that will defile you, but what you comes out of your mouth will defile you. And you really don't know that until you get into the integration of your consciousness with your mechanism and your voice. But unconsciously and in small ways, you destroy your health by the statements you make about yourself around you, because you have to swallow your saliva and the enzymes will break you down, and you are a victim of your own sonics. And that can be shown very easily by kinesiology and many other techniques that are available. But when you're coming into understanding yourself more, meditation is a process where you are actually locking in to the total resonance of your body to give you control over your immune system. There's no God sitting on a throne giving you anything. He's already become you. And what he has done in the process is to generate individuality. Tonight we saw a very small presentation of that condition at the last part of what they showed. There's the heavens with all the stars, and then this red formation of a human body moving through the entire galactic system, representing man. That individualized form goes in and out to integrate itself with its environment. And that same individualized form is locked up as you. And what we're trying to give the person an opportunity to be in control of his own mechanism by validating for them, seek ye first the kingdom of God, which means look inside your cellular structure for the galactic systems that surround you in a miniature form. Like you look up into that place there tonight and see, that's an external expression of what you see inside. And you look in a very minute form inside. It says, seek ye first. That means you have to turn inward to look at it. And its righteousness means how the laws operate inside. And the mechanics of it and the depth of your observation frees you within your own individuality from the oppositional play of the cellular structure, giving you control over the mechanism for the first time. That control is known as realization or equiflow. Now, Luther Burbank tried, while he was in the body, to reduce the eating time of walnuts. Normally it takes 34 years to reduce a walnut tree to produce a walnut to eat it. But it takes for the brain to integrate itself with its atomic mass, it takes about 18 years to achieve it. Jesus left at the age of 12 and disappeared for 18 years and came back. We're trying to reduce it to 10 years minimum for the person to have that integration, or we can't reduce the cleanup time. You still got to clean up your body, and you still have to breathe on your own. But as far as reduction to the experience of the integration with your consciousness and the atomic structure as an experience, the time frame can be reduced, and that's what we're trying to let you have control over your immune system. We can't reduce the cleanup time. You have to clean up the body, you have to correct the processes, and that is still a required certain time. But as far as the internal control and the capability to cope with your environment, that frame time can be reduced. The movie you just saw on the tape there in the video is to help the brain to integrate right and left and to speed up the development of memory and the opening up of intuition. So you gain more capability of handling your immune system and your mechanism. When you were initiated and you were given a preview of seeing a light inside of your head, did everyone see the light when they were initiated? What was the request to make it expand? Good. Give it love, right? It's very hard dedication, because we usually fall asleep at night. And that's the only thing Jesus criticized his disciples for, or his students. He couldn't criticize them for any other behavior, because man is entitled to all the other behavior to work it out himself. But falling asleep is the disengaging of your consciousness, not your intellect. And so you are vulnerable at that point, because your own mechanism can double cross you. You may shut down and then not realize who you are when you're in that state. And then if the body ceases to breathe, it's the end of the journey of disincarnation. But your understanding and your accomplishment is still unfinished. And if you don't know what you are, you're not going to know any more beyond that point, because there's no experience to be relating to. And you only can pick up where you leave off. And that's the essence of consciousness. So the yogis in India who use the word yoga meaning union point out that existence is, that's why they use the word sat to represent existence. And they use chit, which represents consciousness, not intellect. We exist. No matter what we do or don't do, there is no way to get rid of your existence. That tells you automatically your atomic nature is permanent. Like those laser beams in that room tonight. Consciousness is the word chit they use, and doesn't infer your intellectual or smart. When looking at those movements, did you learn any new language? Or you were just conscious of the movements going on?
Conscious of the form.
Right. And as many variations as the light would take, you are more and more conscious of the absorption. So an endless entertainment of consciousness goes on, and therefore they call it avenue conscious. Avenue meaning that there is no end to it, and it's unrehearsed, that it doesn't say how to live the moment that's going on inside of you. And then they use the word ananda or anandam, meaning bliss. When you were looking at the optical expressions, did it create in you a feeling of what?
Exuberance.
That's exactly what we're inferring. And so, in that blissful state, if you were to measure the levels of how your body is working inside to the benefit of your health, you would find it was peaking on a positive reading. Now, we tend to go to sleep for the reason we feel tired, to peak up and wake up feeling refreshed. But we were unconscious. And that type of regeneration makes us again vulnerable. Our immune system drops down. It's when you transcend that condition and you're conscious, not intellectualizing, that is being aware of your internal atomic structure, how it's operating within the tissues, your body is self-regenerating. So it's called cellular rejuvenation. The ancient people refer to that now as samadhi or realization with God. And there are only two positions you can live in, mobile and immobile. The immobile state can be considered next to sleep. But sleep, you're unconscious. The mobile state is you get up and move around and function in the environment. And that state is what Jesus is inferring. My God is of the living and not of the dead. And the things I do, you do also, and greater things shall you do. But he's making you conscious of your structure, what you are, and how to consciously reactivate it so that creative consciousness can flow through it. Now, creative consciousness is moments of inspiration flowing through you and giving you insight into laws of nature, and you can utilize it for the improvement of your environment. And so those who have realized themselves are the individuals who are constantly making cellular transformations in themselves. Now, one of the evidence of this particular process is the restoration of your health. You gain more and more control over your health. And then the second conditions that appear the dominate in your life is your relationship with others. Because you live in the awareness of what you are, not who you are. And there are those who are suddenly realizing something is transforming in you, and they're wanting to know. And the evidence is there that they begin to become more calm in your presence, and your sense of joyousness. And you yourself begin to have a greater sense of inner control of peace. And there are a lot of other wonderful things. But first, you have to gain the control of your mechanism in order to experience the others. If you have any questions you want to ask before we go on further, now's the time to ask them.
Sometimes when you meditate, you see that internal geometry in effect, just like we saw with the laser programs.
Yes.
Is that intellectualizing when you do that?
No, you're not intellectualizing because you cannot. Imagine the light in your head.
Okay.
It's a physiological fact that's occurring in your tissues, but we were never educated to look at ourselves, within ourselves, as an expression of creative consciousness. We are always looking at some erroneous label and feeling stressed out and having to account for so many conditions that we don't even have the slightest understanding why the body is performing these phenomena inside. And whenever we turn to someone, they're giving us all kind of churchianistic words for the internal conditions, and they're all built on who you are and not what you are. We did not know until the last 80 years that the human body was an atomic mass. No one ever substantiated that the minerals in the body were atomic nature. We never even accept our bodies being made of minerals. And yet, for centuries, man has closed his eyes and saw every night the internal configuration going on. And what is that internal configuration? The journey of the sperm to the ovum to ignite by bonding to form a human body, and the ignition of the bonding is the internal explosion of light in the brain cells. But it's going on all the time. And we have many different experiences, if you call death experiences, with all type of different interpretations. And what actually is occurring has never been explained. Many people see in their death experiences a light and a tunnel and someone at the other end. And if they make it back, versus if you don't make it back. But they'll give you all types of descriptions of what is the other side, and the actual thing that is actually taking place is not even recognized. A death experience is a person sees themselves dying and going down a tunnel. And at the end of the tunnel, they may see a big white light. That's their description of their death experience. And then they see someone standing there telling them, "You can't come in now. Time to go back." Or they may see some form of grotesque with an eye looking at them, and the eye is saying, "You can't come, go back." Now, if they wake up from the death experience, you know they're back. When they don't wake up, What do you do with them?
Bury them.
And they will never know what they really went through. And if they wake up and they tell you what they saw in your own structure, it wouldn't be what has actually taken place in them. Because they don't tell you what is actually taking place inside of them, other than they saw a tunnel with light, and at the end of the tunnel, you saw this being saying you can't come in.
Can they learn from that, though, in their next reincarnation? Can they learn from that experience at the end of that lifetime to help them in their next reincarnation? When you see that?
It will make them more interested to change their lifestyle. It'll make them more dedicated to be more conscientious in the things they are saying and doing in their lifestyle. And whatever forced them to have the death experience would immediately be one of the triggering conditions for them to appreciate the second chance of not having to die in the death experience, and would want to become more conscientious about living life objectively, but be carried away with the erroneous notions of what's going on about it. And yet, if they were to be told what is actually occurring, they were not able to grasp it immediately. But the facts are, a sperm is secreted by the father. It cannot turn around and go back. It has to go up through a tunnel. And that tunnel, though it may be several inches, may seem like eternity to a sperm. As far as the sperm mechanism is concerned in the photographing of it, it's camerizing that memory relationship, but may be temporarily suspended at the end of the journey into the mother to bond with the ovum as a being at the other end of the tunnel, and that being may absorb it and the two become one. And so the ovum and the sperm bonds and form you, and it retains it in your brain cells as a memory bank journey. But as far as you are concerned, when it's happening as a sperm and an ovum, you have no connected memory other than it occurred in your cells and is stored in there, in the silicon particles of the cells or in the carbon particles of your cells. But it will record itself there and stay there all the time as that particular process occurs in you. That is what you see, but you don't know. But your optical geometry will create all kind of illusions about where you think you are versus what is actually going on inside of you.
So that's the memory of the journey?
That's the memory of the journey.
So what's all that like? Is it Maya that you see sometimes before? It's like fogging and
well,
bursts of light and stuff.
Those are labels for what? Light is ignition of elements and minerals in the cellular mass. Fog is what?
Gas
dissipation by the ignition of heat to the ratio of output from the cellular discharge. But we don't see that until we have to re-evaluate it. But what is happening to form you is that particular process. but it stores itself as a journey going towards a confrontation and then terminating as a bonding condition of a reaction in you to form you. And when we relive it sometimes, it is a extension on your present life form to allow you to grasp through your understanding of what you are versus who you are. And the fixation of who you are is locked into your individuality, which you call ego, and will lock you out and make you very dogmatic or very egotistical. But if you become aware, because you might have done certain behavioral actions that force you to correct, these are the opportunities of illnesses in the mechanism to reevaluate and come back to look at yourself objectively. Wise men aren't any wiser than have been through the process and got the understanding and are able to live it objectively, to transfer it as a means of awakening others to look at themselves objectively and live that particular internal experience. They call a loved one. What is a loved one? When the sperm is secreted out from the testicles, how many loved ones do you have with you? Good. Congratulations. They may be your uncle, aunt, dad, and all the different relatives involved in the particular loved one. But they'll take geometry in the process of time if they're born and surround you. Do you have brothers and sisters older than you? So you didn't make the race with them. So they were born, who were born before you, made it. Now you have to go back and start over till your time level comes in for you to crystallize. There's no magic about it. It's the facts of how we are coming into the time frame to experience all particular connectedness. Now if you and your sister were born together, you'd either come out as twins. Were born together, you'd either come out as twins. But since you didn't come out together, one had to lose and one had to win. That's facts. You have always been one. You ain't going to be separated other than your individuality in your time frame. Early in the evening I said a bowl of water, and you throw little objects into it and it makes waves or ripples. That is exactly what we are. We are the elements in this cosmos, and we take our present individualized form to play the many roles that we consider what we think we are. It's only representing who we are, not what we are. Yogananda made a statement in his own discovery. Father, mother, have I none. Brother, sister, none. I am he. I am the spirit. Which means now, God became his own creation. I fell off a building, broke up my body, went through the same process. I didn't find no God sitting on a throne waiting, but I experienced the one actual fact that this creative principle has become his universe, and it has become me, providing a condition called individuality to experience. And wherever I look, all the saints were there, and then they disappear. All my brothers and sisters were there, they disappeared. Aunts, uncles, grandparents, all they disappeared, only to see what? I am looking back at myself as atoms flashing, like I'm looking at that movie there tonight. The same cosmic drama going on. Not a single form in there to represent me. But I'm every one of those aspects moving back and forth. Yet there's a sense of me. And this sense of me, I'm not Adano, is a self-containing feeling of always was and always will be, in going no place other than existing as this flow. But if I want to relate and be functional, I'll have to lock in to a certain geometry to which I'm familiar with, or may take some other geometry to which I must identify with. So I saw two geometries confronting me. All the rest is just movement of light back and forth, like the laser picture up there. And the two geometry that made any sense was my own broken body lying on the ground, not moving, and a pregnant woman with a baby inside, another part of the planet. And the thought is coming in from the light, this is your option. Now, the option was only to what? Live in a body form, to go through the same mental disassociation in order to discover what I am without the knowledge of what I am in one body form versus picking up my familiar body form to which I made some headway in recognizing what I am. Now if I pick up the body form of the young baby, I'd temporarily suspend my memory and would have that body brand new to start over and work way through towards an understanding of what I am. But I'll be locked into who for a certain amount of years before I'd ever have the realization to go and wake up the understanding of what I am. But the outline of that body form was there. It was a young boy, Ethiopian parents, and coming to America to study business administration to go back and run his father's business. And the date was there in the year time frame. And the familiar body that just fell off the building, looking there, all broken up, not doing anything but flat out. Yet I am in the air as the all-pervading presence, looking in It has two advantages. One is a sense of unity that has no attachment to anything, neither caring if the body over here wakes up and get well, or the one over there in the formation of being a baby. Out here is strictly a total flow to provide opportunity for the two to interact on the individual level. My consciousness merely zeroed in on the fact I'm familiar with the broken body, and that when I'm not familiar, I'm going to have to suspend my sense of awareness. So give me my broken body, that geometry I'm familiar with. And when I did relate to the broken body, right from the navel I saw like a long string attached to a kite, where my face was in the kite, and at the end of the kite was a long tail, and along the tail of the kite were many faces. I've seen those faces and many more. Those were the people I had to meet if I pick up the broken body to function with it. Now, those faces are myself in many forms. But they only represent different levels of individuality. So, coming back into the body as a working process, it was not for the benefit of changing the world. It was the understanding that this individualized mechanism can work with other individualized representations of the unified principle to give it a chance to accept its conscious identity in the individualized state, instead of having to go through repetitious death experiences for the verification of its identity. Your carbon dioxide becomes my oxygen. So everything that has passed through in your brain is transferred to my nostril. These are two individualized expressions of that unified oxygen going back and forth as a tape. When it was passing through you, wherever you as an individualized mechanism locked in for the personal modification and utilization in that form, is registered in the oxygen. When it comes into my nostril, it's like a tape recorder playing the data. Where I am locking into it, it's re-impressed back, it's going back. Now, when we are totally in the state of conscious alignment between the individuality to the unified state, the knowledge is universal. So we are the God passing through the two individualized tape recorders called Bob and Adano. So that's a funny joke about the whole thing. And the one God is going back and forth, having this internal exchange. What is unique about this creation is that the carbon-based body was singled out as a means to compensate individuality into a permanency, versus the other type of bodies that were originally set up that doesn't provide any sense of permanency for the participation. So creative intelligence would prefer to localize itself in a carbon-based body to give individuality permanency in order for it to talk back to itself throughout the universe, because of all the elements in the processes made up, the carbon-based body is the one that has the quality of permanency. But it can't do that right off the bat, because there would be no accomplishment of immunity, but no accomplishment of compassion. If the carbon-based body was selected right away at the initial creation, and God made this manifestation and would enter it in an individualized state, he wouldn't have any tests for it. What tests would he provide it? But because he didn't use the carbon-based body right away and use silicon, sulfur, methane body without their consent, he, even being the creator, put these geometries together without the consent of the products to be that geometry and infuse it with a breath of life to give it individuality to talk to itself. This particular anguish of non-volunteering but totally drafted would set up resentment and rebellion. And that is very valid when it comes to a creative consciousness looking at the whole process of what it's trying to accomplish in terms of love. To love and not to be challenged in the love, there is no way to see if love will override resentment. In the first place, you and I don't have any resentment. Who invented resentment? If breath of life is put into us and we are made of elements. If we were made of a silicon body, the very first time we are entering it without our consent, do we have any resentment? To who? You're making a body as a creator out of elements that has no way to select or be selected by consent.
But I didn't know any of it.
I who?
The person, the individual that was being compounded out of these elements.
But that is the purpose of the creative intelligence, to put it together without any consent on the element volunteering to become a form, in order to harass it to see if he, the creative intelligence, has a quality imposed upon the form, and then the form would take towards obedience versus disobedience. He would know to what degree of immunity would emerge from the two behaviors in that form. Not the form doesn't know a doggone thing. The form is given one quality, and that one quality that the form is given is individuality. It cannot be revoked. But as far as being put together by its consent? No. If you put it together with its consent the first time, would it consent? Then you see, it would never work in a creative consciousness. A creative consciousness would have to set up the laws that would automatically validate any futuristic transformation or opportunity. So, without the consent, the form is put together and endowed with individuality to challenge the very principle that put it together, knowing fully well that this is an irritation principle for testing its immunity and its capability to respond. It's very practical science and very practical principle. So, by initially taking the elements, throwing it together into a form, and endowing it with the freedom to function, it will have to give it a programming. And the program is, go forth. You didn't have, you didn't give me consent to put you together, but I'm giving you individuality to go forth now. And this breath of life is me inside of you. You don't really have any breath of life but a bunch of elements that didn't have no consent. But I'm making you feel competent to move around with a sense of individuality. And I want to see what would you do as I give you this individuality and I give you the programming. The program is go out